Very interesting stuff here. All right, here we are. We have Katie, who is our settlement specialist, and let's see if growth gets it with settlements. This is interesting stuff, or I think it's interesting stuff, because we have to really know the beginning of the process and the end of the process. And a lot of our podcasts, our recordings have been about the beginning of the process, or whether there is a case, even I guess before the beginning of the process, where we're just talking with people and trying to figure out, do they have a claim? You know, what's the law as it relates to cows or semi-tractor trailers or things like that? Now we're going to the very, very last second of the case, which means that there's been a verdict, there's been a trial, and there's a decision by a jury, and the court orders that someone must pay compensation to somebody else. And then we have to figure out where those dollars go. And that's why Katie's here.
Hello.
Or we have a settlement before trial or before a lawsuit's even filed, where you have a negotiation between two parties and they decide that X amount of money will be appropriate in that situation to pay for the victims, you know, the car crash victims, pain and suffering, medical expenses, incidental losses, mileage to the doctor, wage loss, loss of earning capacity, all that stuff. So, and there's a lot to kind of unpack from all that, because there's a lot of people that you have to deal with. And that's why I have you here, because you can help me explain how this works. So let's say we have a case, and I'll make it somewhat easy. Let's say somebody's rear-ended on I-94 going to a Brewers game. The Brewers, you know, just beat the Dodgers and everybody's excited. And we have somebody who's driving an I-94 and a bunch of intoxicated Dodgers fans are very upset and they rear-end our client. And our client goes to the emergency room, and because the Dodgers fans are not responsible, and I don't mean to speak ill about Dodgers fans, but I'm just a Brewers fan, so I am. But so let's say the Dodgers fans aren't responsible. They don't have much in insurance. They only have $25,000 in insurance to cover the damages that our client sustained. So how does that work? They pay $25,000 to cover all of our client's damages. What's the process there?
Well, I guess it kind of depends on whether or not our client has underinsured motorist coverage. So in that case, we will send affidavits of no other insurance to both the liability carrier and their insured, just to confirm that there is no other possible insurance that we can pursue for the at fault, and just to make sure that there are no assets that we may be able to pursue. If those both come back and we can't find anything to go after, then that's where, if our client has...
So let's say our client does have underinsured motorist coverage, and the underinsured motorist coverage says, yes, you can settle with the at-fault Dodgers fan. What do we have to do to get money in our client's pocket?
So are you talking about after we send the vote letter and all that?
Now you're going way far ahead. So first we have to have documents signed that the client has to... Okay, let me go back, because now... You jumped too far. So we accept the $25,000. We sent vote letters out. Boy, we could really get down into the nitty-gritty here. So maybe this isn't a simple example. So let's go with that. What's a vote letter?
So it is Vote versus Schrader, if I'm correct.
I think it's V-O-G-T, right?
It is, yes.
It's not V-O-T-E, V-O-G-T. Okay. And vote says...
Vote says that we need to obtain permission from the underinsured insurance carrier to accept the settlement from the at-fault carrier. They basically have the option to either substitute funds, so they can say, you know, no, we don't want you to accept this money from the liability carrier. We're going to pay this all instead, and then we will... It's called subrogate, but collect essentially from the liability carrier anything that they had offered as a settlement before.
Okay. And I had a conversation not too long ago with an adjuster from a big Wisconsin insurance company who's been an adjuster for as long as I've been a lawyer, so for over 20 few years here. And this adjuster said that in his experience, he's never substituted funds. So I think that's uncommon for them to substitute funds. But okay, so they, let's say that you send the vote letter and then right away the underinsured motorist says you can accept the $25,000 in limits from the at-fault party. Then what would happen?
So we go ahead and we accept it from the at-fault party.
How do you accept it? What do you do?
So typically, there's a letter that we send or an email that just states we accept $25,000 as full and final satisfaction of our client's claim and agree to pay any medical bills and liens out of the settlement. They will send us a release. We have the client send the or sign the release. Essentially, it's just releasing the insurance company and their insured, assuming they have no assets, for any claims against the accident. So the $25,000, that's going to satisfy the claim for our client against their insurance company and the insured just for this accident. We send it back to the adjuster, obtain the check. And in the meantime, I am negotiating the health insurance liens, MedPay liens, which in Wisconsin, we do have a made whole doctrine. And then, you know, in the off chance that our client doesn't have any health insurance, then I'm negotiating hospital liens, medical bills, things like that.
So that's important to talk about, because this is something that I think a lot of our clients are asking. Why am I paying my health insurance back, or why am I paying the doctors back? Why isn't the at-fault paying them back?
So I like to think of a settlement kind of like a all-inclusive vacation, right? So it's, you're getting this money from the insurance company, and it's going to include your medical bills, any health insurance liens, which are kind of inclusive with the medical bills, along with wage loss, mileage. Granted, you're not made whole in a policy limit situation, but that's where I come in to try and make you as whole as possible by reducing these things. So it just kind of comes down to just trying to pay everything back as little as possible. But the reason at the end of the day why we do have to pay back health insurance is because essentially if health insurance is paying your bills and you're receiving a settlement, it would be considered a double recovery if we're not paying back your health insurance.
And that's a good point. And that's the risk, right? You know, the risk is that if we don't pay him back and health insurance finds out, and I know that this, there have been other situations that people have come to us after they've settled a case with a different law firm, or that there are other things happening. I'll just kind of stop it there. And their health insurance has said, we're not going to pay for future care for you until you pay us back for the money that we paid on your behalf from that other car crash. Which is, so that's the scary thing, is that they do have that power. Now, I think it's very infrequent to very rare to actually have that enforced, but I wouldn't want to have my clients be the next one or be the first one in a year that we see, you know, that they could have some really important procedure coming up and it's not paid for. And just think of that stress. I mean, so that's why you're covering all the bases, making sure that all the payments that have to be made are made. And there's an agreement that with this payment, health insurance is going to be okay, have payment in full, and continue to pay for future care as long as the client is properly insured, has paid their premiums, is a beneficiary of that insurance.
Right, yeah. And I mean, not every health insurance has the right to recovery from a policy limit settlement either. So,
oh, that's a good point. So yeah, so there are some health insurances that are called ERISA plans, or have language saying that no matter what, they get dollar one. And there are other health insurance plans that, and we were talking about one just the other day that starts with a D, that does not have the right to recover. So then you need to know really early on, if a client has multiple health insurance options, which health insurance you want to pay bills, because it's going to make a big difference in the end, knowing what you can do to maximize the dollars in that client's pocket.
Exactly. And it's, I kind of like to think of it as a strategy. You're kind of looking to see what the options are for coverage for clients' medical bills, especially in catastrophic injuries, when there are multiple payers available, who's going to be the best source to cover the treatment and procedures, and how do we make this work?
Yeah. And how do you make it work in a way that's going to be less stressful for the client, get the most money for the client's pocket, and not hurt them in the future, right? And that's a lot. And when you're dealing with a lot of different clients who have a lot of different health insurances, you have to know a lot about really almost every health insurance out there, because with all the clients that we help statewide, you just never know. I mean, there could be clients who have, what were we saying before, courts or United Healthcare, UMR, Dean, all those different insurance companies. And then there's the off chance that a hospital says, hey, we're not going to take health insurance, we're going to have a hospital lien. And then you have that added stressor, because the hospital liens are like the most difficult thing to break through, because there's a certain law in Wisconsin that says if a hospital decides not to take health insurance, or if the client has no health insurance and the hospital files a lien, they can get paid every single penny, right? Almost.
Almost every single penny. I mean, we're luckily in a spot right now where, hospitals are kind of limited to where they can file liens. If a client has private health insurance, certain HMOs, then the hospital cannot file a lien. And that puts us in a great position because we're better able to argue that. But in the circumstances where there is no health insurance, I know I've attended multiple virtual conferences lately and have been able just to kind of look at that and see how to negotiate and what we can do with these things. It's been very interesting just to see exactly what they can recover and kind of what our position is on that at the end of the day.
So going back to our example, we have the Dodgers fan who rear-ends our Happy Brewers fan, and the Happy Brewers fan gets $25,000 in limits, and they have an ERISA plan, let's say, that paid medical bills. So if the medical bills are $25,000, let's see if you can pick up what I'm putting down here. If the ERISA, or if the client's medical bills are $25,000, how do we get any money in the client's pocket?
Well, it kind of comes down to what I can make happen on my end. I think the big part is knowing that the client's health insurance has paid everything. We know that there are going to be contractual adjustments. Granted, with ERISA plans, they typically pay a lot more than what a HMO or a PPO would pay. And that's kind of how I can tell what's an ERISA plan or not. I've been doing this long enough where I've gotten to that point where I can just kind of tell right off the bat what is what.
And that's called the collateral source rule, or with write-offs, we can ask the at-fault to pay the full amount of the bills, and then we pay back health insurance, be it ERISA or regular health insurance. We pay them back only what they paid out. And then of what they paid out, we try to get them to take as little as possible.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, it kind of comes down to who I know. I know I've built a lot of relationships with a lot of different insurance companies over the years. So it's just kind of a matter of how great of an argument I can make, what it says in the policy language, and just kind of what I can make happen at that point.
Interesting. So then if you can make it happen on the $25,000, then does health insurance have a right to get money from our clients under insured motorist coverage?
Well, that depends on what their language says. Some policies cannot cover from underinsured motorist coverage. So that puts us in a great position if I can negotiate it down. If they can recover, then sometimes I can come to an agreement with the insurance company where I can, say, hey, can you accept this out of the liability or the underlying portion of the settlement? And can we pay the rest out of the underinsured? A lot of them don't like to do that because there's never a promise with underinsured motorist coverage. But I think it just kind of all comes down to how great of an argument I can make and how well I know the insurance company that I'm working with.
So this, I think, is interesting, but that's, again, I'm an attorney and I have maybe weird interests in what I think is interesting. But so this is interesting because you have clients who call and say, well, how can you help and why should I hire you? I think this is a good conversation that we can have with them to say, well, we have staff who are dedicated to just simply one portion, which is the settlement process, which is not just, okay, we're going to get money to you, here you go. I mean, there's a lot more thought behind it, a lot more planning strategy to try to make sure that we're getting as much as we can from the at fault and then into the client's pocket. And it's not just as easy as we're going to ask for it, and we're going to get it. We're going to ask for it. We have to fight. And that's what we've had other podcasts about. Well, how do you fight to get the most? And then after you're done fighting with the at fault, then you're really fighting with your client's health insurance or their med pay. Sometimes even the client's doctors. I know this is going back to what we said before, where, you know, write-offs, for example, sometimes doctors do what's called balance bill. So what's balance billing?
So balance billing, so theoretically, let's say your health insurance pays a certain portion, and this is where I'm going to highly emphasize just reading your EOBs when they come in from your health insurance, because a lot of times the hospitals, clinics, they will bill you just the difference of what your health insurance has paid and adjusted off. So at the end of the day, balance billing, the provider, hospital, chiropractor, et cetera, they receive the payment and the adjustment from your health insurance. And they don't take into consideration whether you should not be billed for the remainder or if there's a co-insurance amount, copay amount. They are just billing you for whatever the health insurance didn't pay, which is illegal in Wisconsin. And there are many states where that is also true. But Wisconsin, they cannot do that unless there's a co-insurance, co-pay deductible amount that you are required to pay. They can't balance bill you. And that's true now with hospitals. I believe as of 2022 with emergency room visits, regardless if it's in-network or out-of-network, there's certain, you know, co-pays or deductibles, co-insurance that you're responsible for. But previously, they could bill you the difference if you're out of network, but with emergency situations, they cannot do that any longer.
Interesting. So I think balance billing is something that is infrequent. I think luckily it's infrequent, but when you see it, it can be pretty egregious and it can really hurt the client. So that's something that we have to be aware of and look at really every case to see that everybody's doing what they contractually and legally should be doing. And that's how we give added benefit to our clients, right? Interesting stuff. Well, I said I was going to keep it for 10 minutes. We've gone twice as long as I promised, so I apologize. Thank you very much, Katie. Is there anything else that we should know about the settlement process?
I don't think so. I think it's difficult and complicated, but also partially straightforward. So.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for all your hard work. We have, I think, the luxury now of doing a lot of this virtually, right? Where you don't have to, you know, back in the old days, we had to have this signed, all the settlement documents signed in front of a notary, and then we had to wait, and then maybe they go to the bank or they come to the office and have one of our notaries sign, or you have to have, you know, two witnesses who are not related or things like that. Luckily, I think, if this is, I don't know, the silver lining of the pandemic is that insurance companies understand that we're doing things similar to ways that, you know, the mortgage companies and banks have been doing things for probably 10 plus years. So we can do things, have documents signed electronically. So that's a lot of what you're doing, is you're sending documents out electronically. So it isn't as difficult to come in. We can have clients sign these, look over the documents, meet with them virtually or just over the phone and have a conversation and hopefully get things ironed out. All right. Thank you very much, Katie. Thanks for all your knowledge. I think we prove that you get it. So growth gets it. Good job. What's our next topic be?
Ooh, there's too many topics.
Do you have any opinions? We talked about animals. We went on various tangents about different things like that.
Have we done motorcycles yet?
Oh, that's a good one. We haven't.
And you can bring me back for that one.
Oh, there we go. Yes. Yeah, we should have you and Cindy, and then you can talk about motorcycles. Who else is a motorcyclist?
Just us two.
Just you two. Mm-hmm. Yes, awesome. All right, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.